If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I try to take advice from our guests. And based on the words of Rustin Dodd, Rustin, the past couple of weeks, whenever I get a chance, I've been trying to listen to War on Drugs and also The National, because you've recommended them. Anything else I should put on my list of music to listen to?
Is this Steven, what's happening?
What's up, boss?
I wasn't sure if that was directed at me or not.
No, it's right. It's right at you, Rustin.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
So who do you? I mean, who do you like better, The National or War on Drugs?
I think as a band, I mean, I've always liked The National, probably a little bit more. I mean, they've just been around a little bit longer. Probably like their first kind of breakout was like in the mid 2000s. But the War on Drugs seem like they're a little bit more on the ascent. Like they're still kind of doing kind of different stuff, and National kind of found their groove, and they're kind of just kind of what are what they are now. But I'm trying to think, you know, those two bands are a little bit more like, I don't even really want to call them dad rock, because that's kind of an unfair term, but they're just a little bit more, I guess, accessible rock. There's a band called the Japan Droids, which is a little bit harder, a little faster, kind of more like kind of a punk inspired that I would check out. It's like good music to listen to while you're driving down the highway.
I need that.
So they had an album that came out earlier this year that was pretty. That was their like second album that that I would check out. That's another one of my favorite albums of the year.
Okay, so I've got the Japan Droids. In the past, you told me Titus Andronicus.
Yeah.
The National and War on Drugs.
Yeah, that's a good start.
Okay. Japan Droids. I got to check that out.
Do you like Gorillaz?
Yeah. Did you see them in Kansas City the other night?
Well, here's the deal. I was wanting to go very much so, but I couldn't because I was working at the Haunted Houses. But my 20-year-old son, who's a musician, Richie, he had a chance to go with the bass player in his band, and he said it was incredible. The live show and everything about it was it blew his mind. He said it was awesome. So
yeah, that's.
I wish I would have been there.
That's a band I would like to see. You know, it's like there's some bands you listen to forever, and then you think about like who the actual members of the group are, and you know, I have no idea who's in Gorillaz.
Right. Exactly.
They're cartoon characters, right?
Right. Well, I mean, they have backstories and everything else, but there's real musicians. But they said the live show and everything else, it was just with guest appearances and everything, it was one of the best shows he's ever seen. So, and that's saying something.
How would the Japan Droids compare to, like, the Arctic Monkeys? That sounds like what you described to me when you described them.
Yeah. They'd be kind of similar, I think. It's just two members of the group, just a guitar and a drummer. And they, I mean, it's just kind of like classic American rock and roll.
Cool. Check it out.
Just kind of garage rock, I guess. But, it is very like, you know, windows down, kind of cheesy rock and roll music.
All right. Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. That's our Music Minute with Rustin Dodd. And now we will move on to baseball, even though the news is not good. And so before we get into the Royals, now that it seems like it's going to happen for the Minnesota Twins, their magic number is 2 as they enjoy a 5-game lead here in the final week. And again, I'll point to the fact that Byron Buxton became a star and the team followed. And it's not just a one-man deal, but boy, he was so valuable to them during the stretch that has given them some separation. But what is your level of surprise that when the dust settles, it's going to be Minnesota as the second wild card team?
I am surprised. I mean, for a couple of reasons. One, we may have talked about this before, but, you know, no team I don't believe has ever made the playoffs a year after losing 100 games, and they lost 103 last year. You know, they traded at the deadline to acquire Jaime Garcia, and then were so confident that they were going to make the playoffs that they traded him back, or traded him to the Yankees then, and then also traded their closer, Brandon Kinsler, to the Nationals. So, I mean, I don't think they had a lot of confidence that their starting pitching was going to hold up. And I don't know necessarily, I mean, it has to a degree. I was looking at this. So Twins lead the American League in run score during the All-Star, since during the second half of the season after the All-Star break. I think a lot of that has been sort of the development of Byron Buxton and the way he's turned into, you know, he's probably the best defensive center fielder in baseball and then has now turned into an offensive player with some value as well. And so when you kind of put those two together, he all of a sudden becomes kind of a dark horse MVP candidate. If he would do like what he did in the second half the entire year, he would be that kind of player. I mean, offensive numbers are a little bit, you know, if you look at them as a whole, they're not that great. But he's become a really good player. And then they have just, I don't know, they have an ascending kind of offensive team where, you know, Polanco at shortstop and Escobar at third, Eduardo Escobar at third, and then Kepler and then Dozier and then Joe Mauer's had a nice year. I mean, they have a nice offensive group when you look at kind of the guys, when you kind of get past the names. And they, you know, unlike, you know, their pitching kind of was what, but, you know, unlike the Royals, they kind of had an offense to make up for it. And so, you know, we'll see what they do in the playoffs. I kind of hope they beat the Yankees in the wild card game. It would be an interesting story for sure.
There's no kind of with me. I'm all in.
Yeah.
Twins beat the Yankees.
Yeah, let's go. All right, Rustin, let's get into the Royals. Final homestand of the season and final – should this – I mean, look, they're basically done. They're not going to the playoffs. Should this be viewed anything other than the final homestand for the core group of players who brought this town a championship?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think that's what it should be. I mean, you know, the right way to put it, but with this team over the last couple of weeks, I think it's been increasingly clear that they weren't going to the playoffs. Yet when you're sort of in the fight, day after day and kind of in the grind, you're not going to hear, you know, Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas or Lorenzo Cain sort of concede that, you know, you're just not going to really hear anybody on the team concede the fact that they're not going to make the playoffs. And with that comes kind of a hesitation to talk about those things. But I do think that, you know, they're going to come home tonight, and whether they lose tonight or the Twins win or that happens tomorrow, they're going to be officially eliminated. And I think, you know, the Royals are going to try to re-sign, you know, a player or two, or they're going to look at the marks for these guys, and they're not going to just say, okay, see you guys, you can go sign with the Yankees or Red Sox or whatever. I mean, that's not how it's going to happen, but reality is that these guys at the very least know that they're probably not going to be playing together next year. You know, one, maybe two, I realistically think one would be the most that could possibly be re-signed, but that's just me. You know, we'll be back and the rest will be off somewhere. So it's going to be different for everybody next year, whether there's somebody ends up back here or not. So I think from that standpoint, you may see guys be a little bit more reflective as the week goes on. And obviously we'll see how they're received kind of the final days of the season. But I expect that you're going to see a lot of, you know, standing ovations and those type of things as we get deeper into the week.
So how would you handicap it now as far as who you think the Royals have a legitimate chance to keep as far as the impending free agents?
You know, I've kind of maybe convinced myself of something else, but I'll start with all season long I've thought that they were going to be really aggressive with signing Eric Hosmer, and I think, you know, that they really value his intangibles, his leadership. He's young. He's, you know, he'll turn 28 in the offseason. You know, he's the kind of guy that I think they would feel comfortable investing, you know, that nine-figure deal in. You know, we can, I guess it's another argument of whether or not he's worth what they would be giving him. But right now, I mean, I feel like he would be that kind of guy. Now, having said that, he's had an incredible year. And if it is true that the Red Sox are interested in a first baseman and the Yankees are, then it starts to get a little bit difficult how you find a way that the Royals kind of play in that kind of neighborhood in terms of salaries and contracts. So it's going to be very interesting to see who's in on Hosmer this offseason, because I feel like the way that the Royals, you know, re-sign Eric Hosmer, or even if they, you could say the same thing about Moustakas, is that the markets for those guys, whether it's, you know, the big, you know, clubs that have money, they are maybe don't value those guys as much. So, you know, the mega deal doesn't quite show up. And so then you're able to get those guys on, not a cheap deal, but, you know, something more where the Royals financials could do it, because I, you know, it could maybe, you know, go 150, 170, 180, something like that. But, you know, like anything, you know, anything more, it's just not feasible. And I guess you can make the argument whether or not where the Royals are right now as a club, whether any of these deals are smart for the long term, but that's another discussion. But the reason I say all that is I also wonder, too, maybe in the long term, you know, I just didn't think that they were going to be interested in re-signing Lorenzo Cain because of the age and because of his health issues, and that they weren't going to want to spend a ton of money. But I do wonder if he's the guy that when the dust kind of settles, that other teams don't value him as much, or that there is a, you know, a 3-year deal where you can get him back. I'm wondering, I'm just curious on what the market is going to be for a length of a contract for Lorenzo Cain, because if it's less than 4 seasons, then maybe the Royals would be interested in bringing him back. But anything more than that, I feel like that's when it becomes like something where they wouldn't be interested in that. But I feel like there's a lot of moving parts, and it's going to be a really interesting offseason. But I guess I would still think that they're going to be aggressive in trying to retain Hosmer. I'm wondering how realistic that is with where his value is going to be in the offseason and the clubs that might be interested in him.
Kevin Keatsman interviewed Ned Yost on Friday, and he said that, paraphrasing here, that Hosmer, you know, took the team out to celebrate Moustakas breaking the club's single season home run record, and basically toasted the team, saying, "This is the legacy we're leaving you guys." That seems like a pretty strong implication that Hosmer and Moustakas already see it as a foregone conclusion that they'll be gone. You've been around those guys a lot. Do you get any indications as to how seriously they even take the idea of staying in Kansas City?
I think they both, you know, just having talked to them in spring training and beyond, I don't think that, I think they take it seriously. I think they would. I think maybe there's, you know, this is the kind of thing where they would never say this publicly, so I don't want to put words in their mouth, but maybe there would be some skepticism or some hesitation in believing that the biggest deal is going to be in Kansas City. But I don't necessarily see that there's any sort of willingness to get out of town or anything like that. I mean, I think they would gladly both be back if they felt like, you know, the biggest deals were there. But, you know, then again, could even, you know, the thing about these contracts is we think about the Royals not being able to, you know, spend money like the Yankees or Red Sox or Dodgers. Well, that's true of like 25 other teams. And so it's not just solely the Royals' problem. When a Dodgers or, you know, the Cubs or the Yankees or the Red Sox, when they get involved, it changes things in a free agent market for a player. So, you know, my point in bringing that up is that it's sort of common sense to, if you play for a club and you feel like you're going to have interest from from those type of clubs, it's a totally different free agency thing, and you feel like you're one of the top free agents. The deals that you could be commanding are probably more than what the Royals can afford. So maybe there's some of that, but I know that Eric Hosmer did kind of give a speech when Mike Moustakas hit the home run, but I didn't necessarily hear that the words were said in that way. So I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Rustin Dodd is our guest, right? Rustin, obviously a lot of focus is put on Hosmer and Moustakas and leaving Lorenzo Cain, but the one guy that it seems like most likely they could bring back because they can afford it, and it might make sense is Alcides Escobar, depending on what they feel about Raul Mondesi. And I know that in one of Jeffrey Flanagan's mailbags, he addressed, and we brought this up, the idea of Mondesi perhaps getting a look at center field to replace Cain, and then you re-sign Alcides Escobar, and so that's one route you could go. What do you think, based on what you've heard, how does the team feel about Raul Mondesi, and is there a real sentiment to try to bring back Alcides Escobar to remain as the team's starting shortstop?
So with Mondesi, I asked Ned earlier this week about the idea about him playing third, and he said it's something that's been like thrown around, but never discussed on any sort of serious level. He's heard it, you know, chattered about, but it's not like the Royals are, you know, it's more like a due diligence versatile thing. And it's, to me, it's sort of kind of like the idea that was thrown around before about Chesler Cuthbert moving to second base, which that never transpired, but that was partly because maybe he didn't quite have the ability. Maybe Mondesi would have the ability to play center field. He's never done it before. He told me earlier this week that the Royals hadn't necessarily brought that up with him either, so that might be something that they talk about in the future. But I think it's more to the point that if they, you know, worst came to worst, he might have the ability to do that, and given his speed and athleticism, he might be pretty good at it. But that's just sort of, you know, speculation for now. On Escobar, I don't know. It's hard to get a good feeling because, to me, he's the kind of guy where you would say, hey, you know, would you guys be interested in bringing back Alcides Escobar? And the answer is probably like, well, sure, but what's, you know, the cost and what's the years, and, you know, would they bring him back on like a 1 year, you know, prove it kind of deal? I mean, they might consider that with no risk and maybe a, you know, one for, you know, $5 or $6 million or something like that. I think they would. Would they even do it like, you know, a 2 for $8 or something? And, you know, and you have that insurance in case Mondesi fails and isn't quite able to be your everyday shortstop. And then you have a kind of a low cost alternative. I mean, I know that's still money when you're tight in the budget and you're, you know, giving out, you know, $5 to $8 million for a backup shortstop or something. It might be not the most wise thing, but I feel like if the price is cheap enough for Escobar, that they would be, you know, they might see some value in that. You know, I don't know. He's actually had a better offensive second half than you would think. I think he's hit about .280 with a .315 on base percentage, and about a, you know, an OPS slightly over 700. I think, you know, he's an interesting player. The Royals seemingly value him more than maybe other teams in baseball would. If you just look at the offensive numbers and, you know, the advanced stats from the last few years. So, and he's about to play his 333rd straight game. So they obviously see some sort of value in him, but even they, I think they understand his offensive limitations. And so I don't think they're beating down the door to sign him to some extension, but I think he's the kind of guy that you might wait around until, you know, January, February. And if he doesn't have a lot of interest and the deal in the market goes down for him and you see an opportunity to score a little bit of a value in terms of, what you could get him for at that point, that to me, that he's that kind of guy. But we'll see what happens going forward.
Rustin, final question for you. I will ask you to look into your crystal ball again. If you can only pick from people on the roster, who will be the Royals' closer next year?
Oh man. Mike Minor's a free agent.
It's a mutual option for $10 million. What are the chances of them agreeing to that or something that would keep him here?
I don't know. That seems pretty... He's been good, but seems a little pricey for a reliever. I think that would be more in the neighborhood if he would have become an effective starter again. And that's where that mutual option would have made sense. No, I don't think they'll be taking that. I know it's not the best answer, but I might just kind of cross my fingers that Kelvin Herrera can figure something out in spring training or in his back to what he's been in the past. I mean, obviously there's Scott Alexander as well. I guess it might be him at this point, but that's the point, is that in the offseason they got to figure some stuff out with the bullpen, whether it's younger players coming up through the system or Richard Lovelady, he's out there.
Yeah.
Talked about him.
Thank you.
Whether it's guys like that that come to spring training and they can prove themselves, or whether it's through creative deals this offseason, they got to address the bullpen because, you know, as somebody said, you know, recently, the Royals are always going to be a team of guys with, you know, 5 to 6 inning starting pitchers. That's just the market they're in. They can't afford ones. They got to grow homegrown starting pitchers. And if not, they're going to sign kind of guys like the Jason Hamels and the Ian Kennedys who can go 5 and 6 innings. If you have those guys starting 3 or 4 spots in your starting rotation, you need a better bullpen, and the Royals need a better bullpen. So I think that's one of the top priorities of the offseason, even with all the free agent question marks heading into the winter.
Rustin, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. Who's going to be the closer next year, Jake?
Not on the roster.
Well, look at you.
I'll go ahead and nominate Dick Lovelady.
Well, that's the easy choice for me.
A hard decision.
Right. Let's take a break on that note. Back after this on WHB. Kansas City, you know it's hard to stop a train, and you can get all the information you need about the train, the independent train dealer in your area at trainmidwest.com. The weather is getting cooler now. It was raining today. Old man winter is right around the corner. And like Gary Lezak said, we just went through a long stretch of the temperature being over 85 every day. Point is, the weather is very unpredictable here. You do not want the comfort in your home to be unpredictable. You want it to be consistent. And a train home will keep the comfort consistent in your home, because train comfort is about heating and cooling and beyond. When you walk into a train home, there's a difference in the air. If you're coming in from the cold, the air inside warms you through and through, just like this show. And if you need shelter from the heat, the air inside will feel like a cool breeze drifting off into the ocean. So if you want to be comfortable in your home, you need to go to Train, all right? It's very simple. For all the information you need and to find your independent train dealer, all you have to do is go to trainmidwest.com, TRANE Midwest.com, because it's hard to stop a train.